You're listening to your community radio station, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K284AL Hala'iva, K224CQ Anahola. It's time for In the Garden on the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha, and welcome to In the Garden on the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge to grow well with plants and animals. I'm your host, Paul Massey, Director of Regeneration's Botanical Garden, and on today's show, we'll visit a local farm that's excelling in aquaculture-grown lettuce and heart-of-palm production for on-island restaurants. But first, we'd like to let you know that this KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with our generous underwriters.
Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe in Hanalei is proud to support KKCR and its Ohana, offering organic groceries and produce, a cafe featuring fresh salad bar, hot meals and soups, fresh-made smoothies, and baked goods. Located in the heart of Hanalei, Harvest Market Natural Foods and Cafe, 826-0089.
Anahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building island koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. AnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
The Kauai store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostulas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Garden Island Hydro, assisting with all your aqua hydro soil growing needs. Nutrients, mediums, all natural compost tea, lights, aquaponic and hydroponic components, and more in their 1,700 square foot warehouse at Pu'i Industrial Park, Lihue. Family owned and operated. Open Monday through Saturday, 246-4769, 246-GROW.
And thank you so much to our generous underwriters. We want to let you know as well, there's a chance for you to declare your love on KKCR by donating $10 or more to KKCR by this Friday, February 12th, and hear your declaration of love announced on KKCR and every live show from 7 a.m. to midnight on Valentine's Day, which is Sunday, February 14th. And to sign up, you can go to our website, kkcr.org, where you can also hear audio archives of this show and many other shows, lots of great information, lots of reasons to go over to kkcr.org. Well, we're going to get right to a visit I had to a farm on the south side. It's been really fun taking the conversation beyond the walls of the studio and into the gardens and farms around Kauai. So looking forward to sharing this with you, and want to let people know that we're going to be speaking with Ueli Mueller from KCC, Kauai Community College. He has an Introduction to Aquaponics Systems workshop that begins on March 2nd, and we're going to hear more about it right now. So let's have a listen. I'm lucky enough to be standing here at Kauai Roots Farm. We're down in Kalaheo on the south side of Kauai, and I'm standing here with the farmer, Ed Sint. And I'm also here with Ueli Mueller, and we're here looking at a diversified farming project, including, very excitedly, aquaponics. And we're standing next to two giant tanks. You could probably fit about 20 people in each one of them if they were friends in a hot tub scenario. But this is cold water, and it looks like there's a lot more friends than just 20 in each one of these. What kind of fish are we looking at here?
These are tilapia, golden tilapia. They're approximately a year and a half old. They started out at fingerlings. We put 500 in each tank. They are now probably anywhere from a pound to maybe as much as 2 pounds. And all seem to be happy. Two tanks, they're 9 foot in diameter, approximately 1,600 gallons per tank. And each tank has about, I'd say, between 500 and 600 tilapia in it.
Wow, fantastic. And so these tilapia are getting on in size where they could be consumed as food, or where are they at in their lifespan?
Well, our business model was basically to use the tilapia to feed the plants. We weren't really too concerned about the fact that they would provide a revenue source. However, the larger they get, the more we tend to lean that way a little bit. But it is a different part of a business. We don't have a certified kitchen. Consequently, we would have to basically brine them and sell them whole.
Okay. But I bet you've got a lot of friends who are hungry for fish. And thankfully, the regulations seem to still be that sharing of food on farm or grown in your backyard is still a legal thing to do among friends. So how about you, Ueli? Are you looking forward to trying some of these fish yourself?
Yeah, definitely would, yes. But I had my fish in the college. I managed the system in the college. And, of course, there I do harvest the fish twice a year. So I did sell fish on the college, and, you know, what's leftovers, I eat myself. So I can tell you the fish are really nice. They are tasty fish. So
fantastic. Well, I don't want to detour us too far from the point that really these are the engines of growth for your plants. And that's what it is that you're really focusing on, is the growth of plants through this aquaponic system. And for people who don't understand what that means, people have heard the word aquaculture a lot and hydroponics. What is this aquaponics thing, Ed?
Basically, it's a marriage, pretty much, of the two. What we use the fish for primarily is the fish obviously poop in the tanks, and we then run through, and as you can see, we have filters throughout the system. And really what happens is the fish poop, they go through a swirl filter, pretty much filters all of the solids out, and then they move to the biofilters where the bacterial colonies and stuff change the nitrites into nitrates, and that's our plant food. The biofilters also are as you can see, area for growth of different plants. We've currently got the watercress in these plants, and we have planted many, many different things that they all love to grow there. However, the root systems get to the point where they eat up a lot of the biospace, and consequently you're always changing. But it's basically what we got into this for is to provide you might say, a basis for sourcing of fertilizer for our traditional gardens, which we do with the fish poop that we harvest out of the different areas of the filters and the biofilters, and make it as sustainable as possible, the farm itself.
Right. So there's that concept of hopefully cutting your costs, but you're really creating more of a closer to a closed loop system, so that you're creating the on-site nutrition right on the farm, which is the basis of sustainable agriculture. And it's great to see it in this setting here. We're also standing in a shed that's providing shade on one side for these large 9-foot tanks. And then beyond, I'm seeing you've got a nursery set up. Maybe we could have a walk over there and see what we're looking at. So I'm seeing a beautiful crop of new spring veggies here.
It's lettuce, yes. And we do seed between 350 and 400 plants every week. So now the latest seeding has happened today. It's here. And these are 3 weeks old over on one side. And next week they will be transferred down to the grow beds. Okay. So we have 4 weeks' worth of seedlings here.
Yes. And what sort of potting media am I seeing you're using in these trays?
These are grow cubes. We buy these from a company in California called iHort. And basically it's coconut coir, and they use a binder material, which is organic binding material, to pull it together, hold it together. And what we found after trying to use different media was to try to keep it as clean as we possibly could.
So, yeah, this stuff is sort of like that perfectly cooked devil's food cake. kind of consistency.
Yes. I wouldn't want to try it, but taste it. But in any regard, it bonds together, and as we move down into the deep water beds, you'll see that, we don't have to worry about, messy plants.
Sure.
It's a very clean system.
It stays, this potting cube stays, and it doesn't degrade. Right. And so it's made specifically for aquaculture, aquaponic systems.
Well, no, the iHort cells to differ, we use a lot of these. We plant our tomato starts in these also.
Okay.
Plant the tomato starts in them, and quite frankly, then we move them into a traditional, with the potting soil so that they develop a larger root ball for traditional gardening purposes. Yeah, but they're general purpose. They're not just specific for aquaponics at all.
Okay, great. And I'm peering down in the hole in the center of this potting cube, and I'm seeing what looks like a pelletized seed. Is that what
I'm
saying?
Yeah, we use pelletized seeds. It's easier to move them. So,
So that's just a coating of clay that makes it easier to put one seed in the pot, yeah?
Exactly, because those are lettuce seeds. Lettuce seeds are notoriously small, as we all know, and having them pelleted is a big advantage. And we buy them as well from, organic vendors, so we get them in here.
Fantastic. Let's go and look at some of the grow beds now.
All right.
So now we're standing in front of some of the media beds, and this is just a beautiful thing. It looks almost like it was a landscaped piece here at the farm. And it's filled with these beautiful clay-colored round stones.
Hydroton.
Beautiful. And we've got beautiful watercress growing.
There's different media that you can use. We happen to use this. It's called, they're clay balls or hydroton, which the media is required to have, I'm going to call it little orifices or areas within the media where the bacterial colonies can call home.
Yeah, so basically they look like the lava rock.
Yeah.
It basically looks like...
Yeah, it's
lava.
Not cinder in here.
Yeah, lava. It looks like cinder on the inside, but it's smooth on the outside.
Right, and the big advantage to cinder, cinder is cheaper. This extended clay balls are a little bit more expensive, but they are easier to clean. While cinder is really hard to clean, it's cheaper as when you buy it, and it works as well as, so you can use cinder. You could also use regular stones, but they're just getting heavier, and the smoother the surface is, the worse it actually is for our bacteria. So we want to have a coarse surface. We want to have a porous material to use for not only for the water, but also for the bacteria to live in.
Now, you mentioned cleaning them. How often do you do that, and is it a buildup of algae, or what is the need for cleaning these stones eventually?
Primarily root systems. Algae, as you can tell, with the shade cloth and everything, we really don't have that much of a problem with algae. But depending on what the plant is that we're growing, quite frankly, the roots grow down and they hit, this is a 7-inch deep tank, that once they hit the bottom of the tank, they tend to then spread out and it really plugs up the system after a period of time.
Okay.
So you can see I'm taking two of the beds down and I'm converting all of these to grow the watercress in. So those I'm just now starting to clear out, and as you can see, the balls, the clay balls, are quite more dirty than you find here.
Right.
These I just cleaned out and planted about, 2 months ago?
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
And so in these two watercress beds that I see, how long will you be able to keep them in production until you have to do that cleanup?
Probably close to, I would say, between 6 and 8 months. Maybe not a year, but okay. If you want to take a quick look here, you can kind of see, I'll pull some of these up. Now that's, and as they get down into that area, you see that about 3 to 4 inches down, they get a little dirty and they start spreading out.
And so what is the process of determining whether or not you're feeding the fish the correct amount?
Basically, you can feed the fish if you want to have the fish in production. Or you can feed the fish for your plants. We call it feeding the plants. And what we do is we just feed enough so the fish are okay, but the nutrient level is the point that we need it. So right now we're just feeding basically the plants, but you could feed the fish. If you feed the fish, meaning you give them as much food as they can really absorb, the fish will be that size in probably 6 months. So if that is your model, you know, your business model, you can basically harvest fish twice a year, almost twice a year, let's say maybe 8 months.
But it's to your benefit to have them grow as slow as possible so you don't have to process them.
At this point, exactly, at this point, we don't have the market yet developed, so we really believe that we look at the plant side. Yes. In this operation.
This is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio, and we're listening to Ed Sint and Ueli Mueller of Kauai Roots Farm. And I know, too, Ueli, since you teach at the college, you know a lot of people here on Kauai who are interested in aquaponics, who have set up a home system, who are considering commercial systems. What about this possibility of... as you multiply your fish, you're spreading them out to other growers who need them. Do aquaponic systems maybe go out of balance and people lose their fish, so they need to restock? That those kind of opportunities for you?
That's still an issue. We don't really have a hatchery on the island that is productive as far as I know. Most of the bigger fish operation like this here, we get the fish off island, mostly from... The Big Island, is that correct? Yes.
So they're not spawning in the tank here.
No. The tanks are not.
We don't know.
The tanks are not set up for that, and you don't really want to have that in a system, because usually you want to harvest the full tank, so you can restock the tank.
Okay.
There's many ways how to do it, but spawning is really not the issue because they are overstocked for spawning.
I see.
Spawning, the fish need their own space. They need sort of privacy, which we don't provide here.
Okay, excellent. Good. Well, let's go have a look at some of the other grow beds, you guys. In fact, actually, before we do that, I wanted to ask you about your shade cloth, because this is a much different style of shade cloth than you see usually employed at farms. And we're looking at basically metallic-looking shade cloth. Lets a lot of sun in, but how is it working for you?
The trade name is Illuminet, and it's pretty well known, pretty well used in the ag community, especially with the high tunnels and that sort of thing. And quite frankly, we learn a lot as we move through these steps here. And this is 60% sun comes through, 40% shade, so it's a 60-40. It's fine for what we're using here with the watercress. However, on the lettuce, we found that basically I should have gone the other way, 40% sun, 60% shade.
I see.
And so we're this summer we're going to move to the higher density, but it'll still be the Illuminet. The nice thing about this is, as you can tell, it doesn't curtail any air movement, so we get good air movement throughout it, and it does seem to really do the trick as far as the proper shade.
Great. And is it better at deflecting the heat than a standard black cloth, I would imagine?
Absolutely. Right. Absolutely. We'll visit down underneath the lettuce beds, and you can just walk in and tell an instant.
Great. Let's have a look at that.
All right.
Okay, here we go.
What turned the corner for us as far as understanding the nature of a commercial level system, I think, is I attended a class in Florida that was hosted by Pentair. Jim Ricosi, who was the gentleman that developed aquaponics down in the BVI, he was the lead instructor along with Wilson Leonard out of Australia. And almost from the moment we walked into the class, all you could hear was solids, solids. You got to get rid of solids. And I reflected on what we were doing, and we really didn't have solids filter.
And you're referring to solid waste created by the
fish poop. Yep. So through that class, I basically learned a whole heck of a lot about how to process, you might say, the solids and the media beds and we have different levels of filtration as we go through the system, and you can kind of see that filtration is probably the single most important aspect of aquaponics. With hydroponics, you don't have that problem because it's all chemical-based intrusion and, your elements and the minerals and stuff. Whereas here, no, you're developing them. More or less, you're inventing them as it moves through the system.
And even in an aquaculture fish-only system, you don't have as much need to filter out?
Yes, probably more so.
Okay.
In aquaculture,
but
I think.
But it seems that then this would have been solved decades ago.
Well, BVI started the aquaponic system basically, I think, probably close to 30 years ago. It's been quite some time ago. But it was just the evolution of understanding what was going on and hydrology, and there's so many different components, the chemical side of it and everything else that interject themselves at different points, and you got to get them all kind of right. I won't say it has to be perfect, but it's got to be real close. So,
okay, great. Aquaponics does come out of recirculation aquaculture. So basically, when they started to having the problem that they just couldn't wash down, you know, the fish effluents, when they really had to clean up their system and put in filters, then they were able to get most of the poisons out. So we're talking ammonia and the nitrites. But then they kind of got to the point where their nitrates kind of added up, and they didn't know what to do with them. So somebody then came up with the solution, putting some tomatoes in there. You know, grow tomatoes, because those are really heavy feeders. And perfectly, here we got the aquaponics idea. And from there, it just took off. And as Ed already mentioned, the work of Roccozzi was about, started in the 70s, 1970s.
Late 70s.
In the University of Virgin Islands. So UVI is the modern kind of place where it started.
Aquaculture, to understand filtration in aquaculture, I think, is perhaps more preeminent in the design of the system. They use a lot of mechanical filtration in those systems, too, whereas our filters are a lot of basically the biofilters, as long with settling filters and things like that. So very little mechanical filter. We have none, but as far as use in the aquaponics area, number one, it's very expensive to implement, and the systems for aquaculture are either all enclosed as opposed to this, which you're, you know, kind of sharing Mother Nature, sun, and things like that. So it's a more, what I say, regimented system.
In addition to that, we have to say that we really need some stage of the solid. We need the mineralization, so we keep the solids in longer because we're going to get the micronutrients out in the mineralization stage, while the aquaculture people, of course, they don't care about that. They want to have the solids out as soon as possible.
So a simple yet a very complex system all in one, and figuring out how to manage it and create that balance, that homeostasis within your particular environment, takes a lot of tweaking, and I see you guys are well on your way to getting this system really balanced. Let's finish up looking at the lettuce beds. Now, these lettuce beds here represent the primary output in terms of production that you do here?
They are the source of our financial success.
And so talking on that, in terms of the financial success of an aquaponic system, when you look at a similar space in terms of size, and then also considering the energy needs of a system, how does aquaponics stack up with traditional soil-based agriculture? And I know you've certainly done that here as well.
Basically, what we're looking at right here, we've got in terms of these two beds are really the source of the revenue here. And we generate as much revenue out of these two beds in a week as we would in a month with traditional gardening. And we've elected to go with high level or high range product with regard to the lettuce. We sell our lettuces for considerably more than what you would typically find in a supermarket, simply because we have butterhead varieties, we have incised varieties, and for the restaurant trade, they love it. There's less effort in putting together the salad mixes and things like that. And as you can see, it's we really don't even have to wash it down. We wash and spin, and you can see the cleanliness of the root systems and stuff like that. So it's considerably easier to run this system.
Incredible. And I'm just stunned by the density that I'm looking at.
Density, of course, yes. We have 6-inch center here, plant to plant. And they are just on week 3, so they are ready to harvest at the end of, mid-next week. When do you start? Wednesday, right, for harvesting, Ed?
Monday.
Oh, Monday already. Mm-hmm. So they are ready for Monday harvest.
So probably a full week faster than a lettuce in a traditional soil bed.
I believe so. I mean, that's what the literature says. Myself, I never really done a comparison, you know. So I can't really.
But it's fast. Can we agree it's fast?
I mean, it's we have it 4 weeks on the seeding table and 4 weeks in the grow bed. So
yeah. Okay. That sounds about on par.
It's pretty good, I think.
I would say from our experience, and we've got lettuce, as you can see, scattered throughout, but I would say the primary benefit is the fact that you have a lot less waste in this system than you do with the other systems. You're not dealing with the level of pests as well as disease that you would. I mean, everything is above ground, and we have a much easier time of controlling the pests. And as far as, you know, soil-borne diseases, there is none.
Fantastic. And your farm is located, like so much of the farmland here on Kauai, you are on a slope here. And a system like this, you're not really risking soil erosion. You've made some good terracing here to house these beautiful grow beds. And you're not digging in the soil, disturbing the soil as well, so no concern there.
Yeah.
So a good environmental stewardship as well. What sort of varieties of lettuce are we looking at growing here? Or is that a trade secret?
No, it's not. We grow Solanova, which is, I believe I can say that, is one of Johnny's seeds. Okay. So it's one of the more expensive ones, but they're really specific to small. You can grow them out to bigger size, but they do pretty well in small size too. So we don't have to grow them out, you know. So the 6-inch center-to-center here, which is really dense, as you probably have noticed, it works fine with this particular kind of lettuce.
The other thing we noticed with the Solanova is we don't have the problems with regard to bolting. We're under much tighter controls here. As Uli mentioned, we have 4 weeks and 4 weeks, and at the end of the day, they come out of here in 8 weeks. Whereas with the traditional lettuce growing, a lot of times you're kind of the harvest is predicated on how Mother Nature is treating you, whether it's been raining and destroyed your crop, or whether the sun hasn't been shining or has been shining too much. Mm-hmm. Whereas we can really control it between the shade cloths and the time frames that we're working with. Right. It's much, much easier control.
And what would you say the greatest single variable is in terms of the system and the predictability of the rate of harvest, the quantity of harvest?
Heat and sunshine. So if the heat, like last summer, we had an extremely warm summer here, and we had some issues, we could tell. But yeah, and sunshine too. I mean, if we have a long period of cloud, we would see in the speed of the growth here. But one of the big advantages we haven't talked about it is the water use. So if you look at those grow beds, now you take about 40 pounds out, right? Between 40 and 60 pounds a week, And we use probably 60 gallons a week, 60 gallons of water a week. I mean, compare that to what you would use on the on soil base, especially if it's not raining. So now rainwater is the other thing. We're going to have a rainwater catchment here, so we basically use that too. But, you know, just the amount of water used is a big advantage. And this is something we need to look at in places, in many places on the mainland we have droughts, you know, and that would be a big, big advantage against drought.
And one of the things that certainly stands out is I do hear pumps running everywhere I go throughout your system here. So you do have that energy usage. We're here on Kauai where electricity costs more than anywhere else on the planet, perhaps. And so how does that factor in for you? Is that a real concern about how much energy this kind of system takes?
Real concern, no. Well, we've tried to minimize it to a degree. We have a full-on photovoltaic system that we use along with battery backup and all the necessary ingredients to ensure us that we have, a full running system all the time. At this point in time, and this includes refrigeration and all of the pumps and everything we've got going here as far as the fans for the other system, we use probably dollar-wise, and I think our rates right now are about, 37 cents or something like that per kilowatt-hour. We're spending about $140 to $160 a month on electricity, which is nothing.
Wow, no kidding. For a project like this, yeah, it certainly seems to be a drop in the bucket to what you guys are yielding at the at the gate. So, and then one final thing about the environmental, I'm wondering about the water temperature and how much you have to moderate that.
Because we do have so much water in here, we have almost
8,000
gallons, so close to 8,000 gallons. So the temperature does not really change that much. So I think year round we would probably have about 10 degrees Fahrenheit as a difference, and so that's not really a concern. Much bigger concern is if you use different systems when you have nutrient film technology, for example, where the water comes down in just a trickle, you know, and over the lengths of a pipe it might heat up tremendously. While here, the those beds are 4 by 50
yeah.
4 by 50 and about a foot deep, so there's just so much water, it takes a lot of energy. And as you see, they're covered, because right now they're all covered with the plants, all the filters are covered with tops, so we don't really have much fluctuation in temperature.
This is In the Garden on the Farm on Kauai Community Radio. We're here until 1 o'clock, and we're listening to Ueli Mueller and Ed Sint from Kauai Roots Farm talking about aquaponic systems and growing lettuce. We're also going to get to talking about heart of palm production as well, so stay tuned for that. And back to the show. Fantastic. So we're going to get to talking all about the college program, but before we get to that, is there anything else about the system or things that you'd like to point out or talk about?
I'd say the only other thing, and you can hear it standing here, the only other thing is the other seems like component. We talk about fish poop and nitrates and that sort of thing. Air. If you notice, air is a very important ingredient between, obviously, the fish need it to live, and the plants. We have air circulating throughout the grow beds. And I have noticed before, we've had a couple different size pumps and stuff like that, but it's really important to aerate these beds too.
So your choice of location, the aspect with which you've built this to allow for capturing the prevailing trade winds, that kind of thing, it has assisted you? I mean, you don't have fans. We're in a hoop house that basically has open ends. So the amount of airflow that's coming through is just basically based on the wind that you have.
Exactly.
Yeah? So smart design, placement, and consideration of airflow, of course, essential for healthy crop growth.
we've been able to control it. With minimal efforts, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking a lot on the show and really in the community in general about this new Food Safety Management Act that's coming out. And the produce specifications or regulations seem to be some of the more challenging ones in terms of shipping produce and all that sort of thing. What's your thoughts on this new requirement system for producers?
Food safety. We're very concerned because we do not have a certified kitchen. And we adhere to all the guidelines as far as we're not cutting or we're not mixing bagged lettuce or anything like that. But some of the new regulations that are coming down are going to more or less, I'd say, mandate that we have to change some of what we're doing. If you've noticed upstairs there, we're getting some stainless steel sinks and things like that in. So I think although they may not call it a commercial kitchen in the future, we're going to have to be close to having the same type of system for cleanliness, and in particular if we're using knives or anything to prepare or add value to the produce, which it looks like it's probably going to be necessary. So, yes, concern.
Yeah. In any sense that the federal government or any other agency is going to do any cost sharing about these additional expenses that farmers are looking at?
I haven't heard anything along those lines. Of course, all of this FSA stuff going on right now is still, hypothetical. I don't know if anybody's nailed down exactly what it's going to be. But quite frankly, I've used the NRCS in the past. The NRCS has assisted in the high tunnels. They've assisted in the drip irrigation systems for the gardens. There are different vehicles, and as a matter of fact, I heard just recently I didn't get compensated for the high tunnel that's over the aquaponic system last year because it was only specific to traditional gardening. They are now considering aquaponics as a part of their support.
Excellent. No doubt after looking at your successful system. Welly has taken the helm over there at the Kauai Community College in terms of the aquaponic education program, and you've got a new class offering coming up soon?
Yes, that is right, and it already starts on March 2nd, so it's going to be 5 weeks from 5:30 to 8:30 on Wednesdays. And you can call the OSET office at the college and get more information. The big advantage that I was able to get was actually I do have scholarships available, and I found them in the small business community on the island, which I'm really happy. And those are a couple of companies. First off, it's GIH, is the Garden Island Hydro, as well as Kauai Irrigation. Both of those companies provided scholarships for the students. And then Holuwehi, the Institute for Sustainability, also from the college itself, is going to take some of the students as well. So I do have 9 scholarships available, which is a big chunk of the cost for the class. So the first 9 people who register will be able to get those scholarships.
Wow,
so
fantastic.
If we do have a max of 12 students, so if you should not be able to get in this time, the next class is already scheduled for August 3rd to the 31st, which is again a Wednesday afternoon, same time, 5:30 to 8:30. And I'm looking forward to see as many people as we can. We're really going to teach not the commercial side, like what we looked at right now, but the home side, the hobby user, the family who wants to have a little aquaponic system on their lanai in their backyard. That's what we're going to teach. We're going to tell them how to do it. And as you said, it takes a little bit more learning curve to get to the minimum than what you look at the soil. But then again, if you ever stuck, with some seeds in the soil, and then the first time they came up, everybody happy, and then next time it didn't work so well, because the soil isn't that easy. You have to learn a lot there too. Mm-hmm. And that's why they have the master gardening classes, you know. It's not because it's that easy that everybody just can do it. You have to learn as well. So in aquaponics, it's a little different. You have to learn it up front. Because if you don't get the basic factors right, you're going to have a hard time even to get started. So that's why the class is there, so to get you guys started. And I believe, you know, once you get started, it's so exciting. It's so exciting to get your own produce, you know, to harvest. Basically, the advantage is it's all on waist height, you know. You can do it yourself in a place where you're comfortable working, and you don't have to deal with weeds. And as Ed already mentioned, no pesticides, soil-based pesticides.
I really want to commend you for putting together the scholarship program for the students. I'd say that all of the classes at KCC are reasonably priced, yet even with a reasonable price, it's still out of the reach of many people to be able to make that payment. And so having these kind of scholarship programs can really help to fill that gap. And I want to give out a special thanks to our dearly departed friend, Dr. Glenn Hans, who used to run the Sustainable Food Pathway Program at KCC. He worked so hard each and every time that we held the Sustainable Gardening Farming Training Program to ensure that there would be scholarship monies available. And he really just picked up the phone and made some cold calls or warmed up those calls he'd made before. I think it's great that you've gone to some of the established businesses here and give them an opportunity to stand up and support this really important component of local food production, the aquaponic system. So.
And I want to emphasize, it's the small business community that I'm looking at, you know. I mean, the chain stores, yeah, we have them everywhere, but their baseline is if the revenue doesn't come in, they just move on, you know. But the small business, our friends in the small business community, they stay here, you know. They come, they have good times, they have bad times, and I really think we should look at those as a source of buying our, you know, whatever we need for the systems.
Indeed. So thanks again to Garden Island Hydro and Kauai Irrigation, as well as the Ho'oulu'wehi Sustainable Living Institute of Kauai program at Kauai Community College. And again, the dates on this Introduction to Aquaponics System class are?
This is March 2, 9, 16, 23, and 30. So it's five consecutive Wednesday afternoons, 5:30 to 8:30, and if you cannot make those dates, then August will be August 3 to 31st, the same schedule.
Excellent. Well, Ueli, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the program.
And Ed, beautiful farm you have here, and we'll look forward to seeing some of this beautiful lettuce leaves appearing on the plates at the finest restaurants here on Kauai in the coming days.
We will enjoy that moment.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. Best of luck. Well, I stuck around on the farm there after our visit to the aquaponics system, and I got a chance to step into the palm forest with Ed Sint, and we had a discussion about one of the exciting emerging crops available for growers to expand into here on Kauai. And we're going to hear about that right now. Please stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations at 1 o'clock with Tracy.
Good luck on a different show.
Today I'm here on the south side of Kauai in beautiful Kalaheo, and we're here at Kauai Roots Farm, and I'm here with farmer Ed Sint, and he's got a really exciting crop here, very well suited to the subtropical and tropical zones, very much highly sought after for restaurant and anybody really who can get their hands on. Heart of palm is what we're looking at today. What can you tell us, Ed?
Bactris gassipes. That's the official name of the hearts of palm. They're more commonly known, and they're grown in Florida as well as here in Hawaii as far as the U.S. They're known as peach palms. And basically, most of the people that are familiar with palms buy them in a can. And they're typically from Central America, Costa Rica, and that general vicinity. What I did about 7 years ago, in addition to having the traditional garden, was looked into hearts of palm, and there was no one on island that was really growing it. And most of the hearts of palm that were being served at restaurants here were being sourced out of the Big Island. And so I looked around a little bit, and the next thing you know, I bought myself 200 keikis, shipped them over, and basically you're looking right now at the two beds or the two orchards of the hearts of palm, and that they consist of about 200 clumps. The Bactris cacipes is a clumping palm, just like an areca.
Yes.
So if you whack a keiki off, or they wouldn't be keikis when you whack them, but once you cut them down, they regenerate. And so each clump typically would have anywhere from four clumps in them. We try to cull, because a lot of the keikis that come up, basically, they aren't going straight up. They're going out to the side or one way or another. So they tend to take a lot of energy, and they're not productive as far as the stem itself.
Right.
So
you keep them thin, very similar to a banana clump.
Yeah. Yep. You go through and basically clean, you might say, a lot of the palm fronds and things like that off of them, just to keep yourself so you can walk through the beds and things. But it takes about, from the time I planted the keikis, it took almost 2 years to get to the point where we could start harvesting. And these palms you're looking at right now are all 7 years old, and as you can see looking at the base of them, most all of them have at least maybe 2, 3, 4 stalks under them that have been cut down, and that's been the source of the hearts, you might say. But in addition, as you look, you see all the ones that have been cut, you see another 3 or 4 that are ready to be harvested. So we have it's a regenerative crop. The World Health Organization, or one of those groups, put together a document here a while back. And basically, hearts of palm is one of the most underutilized food sources on the planet. And why is that? In Central America, basically, it's used, the seeds are used to grind up, and they're used for flour, consequently bread and all of the value-add products that follow on with that. The palm fronds themselves are very, very quickly decomposed, so they're good mulch, they're good, and I use them throughout the orchards themselves. And then you have the heart itself, which basically, like I say, in Central America, they cut them a lot younger than these would be, because we have base stems that are as large as about 3 inches in diameter once we harvest them, and that's what goes to the restaurant trades. So fresh hearts of palm is completely different than what you would buy in a can, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
And
superior in every way, I would imagine.
Well, it's fresh. It can be cooked. It can be served raw, salads and things like that. It's the meat of the heart is really a very tender, semi-sweet. It's almost like a chestnut, a water chestnut or something like that, if you can liken that to it. And if you use it to cook with, it'll absorb all of the flavors associated with the spices. My wife makes a clam linguine, and consequently the lemon and everything that's in the linguine gets absorbed by the heart. And like I say, the pieces stay pretty crisp, or what I say, crunchy. And so it's nice to crunch down on one of those, and you have all this explosion of flavor.
Mm.
That is, so it's really a very versatile restaurant food. So that's been our target for these. We do sell in a few markets and things like that, but most of the trade is, with our limited production capability, most of the product is delivered to restaurant trade.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. So I'm wondering if you've let any of the stems go so long as that they have flowered and set seed.
Yes. You see two hearts over there, and as you can tell, they're probably in the neighborhood of 40 feet tall.
Right.
And you can see the seed pods.
I do now.
And if you look at the seed pods, you note how large the seeds are. The seeds are probably about almost the size of a small orange.
Oh, wow. So the seed plus the fleshy fruit surrounding the seed.
Exactly.
Yes?
Yep, yep. And
you've tried to eat them as well?
Well, we haven't eaten them, but we have taken them and, as curiosity, tried to find out how you make flour out of them. And you make flour out of the pulp, not the seed itself. And, no, we haven't really eaten any, but, we couldn't make flour out of it either. We haven't quite got that down, and we ran out of time doing it. But, yeah, we would like to try to figure out how to be able to raise them ourselves. And so far, I've got two other stands. I've got another 300 trees in, or clumps in, that are just now starting to get productive. They've been in about 2 years.
Yes.
But you can generate them from seed. I have bought seed before, but the biggest problem is if you get seeds from South America, the nature of this palm is these big spikes. And when I talk about big spikes, that's not an understatement. They are nasty, nasty. They're 3-4 inches long and about 1/4 inch at the base. They're like a knife. And so,
it's a deal breaker, as they say.
Oh, yes. Well, and so when I ordered seeds, I get 500 seeds. I'd get about 60% germination. Then I have, and that takes 3 months to get them to germinate. And after they germinate, you kind of watch them to see whether or not they're going to develop the spikes. And you can usually tell that in about 5 to 6 months. And I ended up with probably less than 10% of the seeds that I had got that I could use for seeding for palms. So it was a big waste of time and money.
Sure.
When I can buy them from the Big Island.
Sure. And so the primary mechanism of propagation then is through division of these clumps. Is that correct?
That is, and I have done that. It's very time consuming. Basically, you have to split off the keiki. You sever all but two roots on it, and you then kind of peel it back or separate it from the clump. And you then let it go for a couple more months,
mm-hmm.
and it'll develop other roots.
Right.
And then you can cut the two that you left because you have new root growth on it, and then you transplant them. But again, that's a very time-consuming effort.
Right.
And do they all live? No, they don't all live. I'd say there you probably get 60% that will go forward.
Okay.
But it's a lot of work to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Do the stems, we're talking again about the heart of palm or peach palm, the Latin name again, Ed, is?
Bactris gasipis.
All right. And this plant, you're talking about the proper age for harvesting the stems. If you let them get over a certain age, is the entire heart of palm not usable, or does it just get larger and larger through time?
It just gets larger and larger. The single problem I found with letting these get larger is in fact they need a lot of water. They need approximately 4 inches of water a month, which is just tough here on the south side of the island. So last year when we had the more or less drought, well, there was problems. Because then the heart itself, it isn't as moist. It seems like the plant tends mm-hmm. to then convert that moisture into growth
or
whatever. Living, I guess.
Right.
And so really I'd say the ideal size of these palms where you can maximize your stem harvest and stuff like that is probably about 4 inches to 5 inches in diameter.
Okay.
And if you let it go much beyond that, you can still harvest it, but it isn't the optimal time or from a standpoint of profitability. Do you want to put that much money into getting something that's a little bit bigger? Now, you just make sure you got more stems growing.
Right.
Rather than big ones.
Right. So I know that people as well use the acai palm another clumping palm as right. a source for Heart of Palm. Did you look at them or any other species of palm in your decision process?
I looked into it, but not necessarily for the hearts. Frankly, they're a different style palm. You can see you really don't get the cakey growth on an Asahi as you would on the Bactris cacipes. Mm-hmm. What I'm looking at for the Asahi is basically the Asahi berry. I have some friends that are doing cacao, and we're talking about chocolate-covered Asahi berries.
They're just beautiful palms, the Asahi.
They are. They are great. You can see I have... And as a matter of fact, now these, I have two or three of them up above there that seed. And so I have keikis growing everywhere. Yeah, so the because the seeds have fallen and they just pop up, and you can see there's one right there. So I'm gonna try to expand the Asahi, but it takes 6 to 7 years before you can really harvest the berries. So we're about 5 years into it with the ones up at the very top there.
Wow. It seems that you've chosen a couple of major crops that are really good in combination for the restaurant trade, the Heart of Palm, and then lettuce of various textures and colors, high quality lettuce that can be used in a beautiful mix. Do you have any other crops here that you were thinking specifically for the restaurant trade, or are there things on your mind that you'd like to expand to?
Well, we've been doing this now for about 7 years, and quite frankly, nothing's forever, I think, in the garden trade. Mother Nature has her whims and things, and you move stuff around simply because the pests attack it, or you have some soil-borne disease that attacks it. So you kind of go with the flow and still try to maintain some communications or some relationships with the restaurants. And so what we typically try to do is kind of pick the low-hanging fruit. And it's no problem selling the hearts and palms. I have no problem selling carrots and lettuce, kale. We have tried fennel. We've tried some other products. And it's much more sporadic as far as the business. Mm-hmm. Not that many restaurants, maybe do these particular things. Right. What has become hot over the last, in more ways than one, over the last 2-3 years, is peppers. We have probably 30% of our garden space dedicated to peppers now. Okay. For the local pepper water. Yes. We have jalapenos, habaneros. We have tried some other of the ghost peppers, the really hot sort of things, and that again gets to the point. There's not much of a market for it. Everybody likes to talk about one or two.
Yes.
we kind of tend to try to stay with what the market is buying and try to identify 3 or 4 items because we're not that our bandwidth is fairly limited.
Right.
So we stick with what we think can make a buck and stay in business.
Awesome.
And the peppers, this seems like a really ideal climate here on the south side. Lots of hot sunshine. Do you have a problem with the pepper weevils?
No, not a one. I keep you waiting. The peppers are, as I call stuff like this, pretty much bulletproof. I mean, I have not had a big problem. They do require moist soil. I mean, you got to keep them watered. But other than that, once you keep them watered and a little bit of fertilizer, and with the aquaponic system, I do a lot of fish emulsion and fish poop in with the peppers, and it works great.
Where are some of the restaurants, if you'd like to mention them, where people can be eating some of your beautiful produce?
We take care of Merriman's down in Kukui'ula, and we take care of Gaylord's in Lihue. And the brewery, Kauai Brewery, Joe and his family down there. So they all, between those three restaurants, we sell probably 70% of what we grow. And so we're not very horizontally established. We're pretty vertically established for the market, you might say.
Well, it's great. Giving hope to small producers in Hawaii that... you can have a system that's not too complicated. You know, choose a few crops that do really well in your area, get really good at growing them, develop the right relationships with a handful of restaurants that need the kind of volume that keep you in business, and you got it made.
And take good care of them, and they'll take good care of you. The farm-to-table concept is just unbelievable for us small farmers. To be able to get in and to take good care of your clients, make sure you're selling product that has the value and the quality that they're looking for, we have no problem collecting money, and so it's really a pretty simple business model to follow. And if you enjoy getting your fingers dirty and you enjoy farming at the level we're doing it at anyway, any regard, it's really a fun business. Mm-hmm. And to meet people like Paul and the rest of the people around, and it makes it more fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you so much, Ed Sint and Ueli Miller of the Kauai Roots Farm. There is an aquaponics workshop coming up at KCC starting on the 2nd of March. And for more information, you can do an internet search for Kauai OSET, O-C-E-T. That does it for today's show. To hear previous audio recordings of previous shows, you can go to kkcr.org and click the audio archive link. And please stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations. And thanks for tuning in. Tune in again next week for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. Aloha, everyone. This is KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL, Hale'iwa.